Want to know what strategies real graduates use to launch their career? Well, here's your chance. From personal stories to insider tips, our interviews with graduates and campus recruiters will equip you with the knowledge and inspiration you need to take off and stand out from the crowd. Brought to you by Prospel, your one-stop shop for finding and securing your dream internship or fresh graduate job.
Could you give us a brief self-introduction, please?
I have been a career consultant in various different forms over the last 8 to 9 years, specifically working for Capital One in their internal strategy arm for a little bit, and then more so in the last 7 or so years at McKinsey & Company as a management consultant, specifically focusing on the healthcare systems and services industry. So think about your insurances, your hospitals, your healthcare tech companies, these other sorts. Yeah, happy to be sharing something hopefully interesting about the consulting industry and the lay of the land a bit, just to demystify what actually happens and what we do.
Awesome. Thanks so much. I guess for anyone who's never heard of healthcare consulting, could you explain what that industry is about?
Yeah, so healthcare consulting really just means that you are doing consulting for clients. I think the basic tenet of it, which is consulting, right? And let me actually take a step back here. So consulting, as we sort of define it, or like how I define it, is you are effectively the people that are deployed to solve problems that organizations of various sizes do not have the capacity to solve themselves or do not want to solve themselves for whatever reason. It could be for operational reasons. It could be for strategic reasons. It could be that they just want like a third party perspective that is unbiased, right? But that is essentially the whole gamut of what consulting does as an industry. Now, healthcare consulting, more to your question, Francis, is just the same thing, except more so applied to healthcare. Meaning you are going to need more expert knowledge on how does the healthcare systems operate? You know, like, for example, like how does the payment flow happen between the patient and the provider and the insurance, right? Like it does help to know these things, and that is very specific to the healthcare industry. But the fundamental tenets of what we do, right, which is, oh, we are going to be helping them improve their operations. Or, oh, let us like help you think through your 5-year plan for your like generative AI strategy. Like these types of work will not change, and that is a bit agnostic of the industry that you're working.
Got it. Would you know if healthcare consulting is like a bigger thing in the US than in other countries by any chance?
My strong guess, and I think I also have some facts to prove this, is that it is larger in the US. And the main reason is because, and by the way, like all of my projects actually mostly have been focused in the US, likely for this reason, which is that US healthcare is very unlike other countries' healthcare systems. There are some parts where that works well, and then there are many parts where that doesn't work well. But in many, many like European, Asian, you know, like other like, you know, oceanic countries, right? Like, you know, healthcare is a government instituted like single payer system, as we call it. The government is the one that is taking on the healthcare risk, right? And is effectively paying for the medical cost of the people that need care. In the US, that is not the case. It is very much a free-for-all system where you have like a dozen, maybe the largest like payers, and then a few, like several dozen more smaller payers that are all vying for membership. And also there's the whole idea of like employer mandated healthcare. So like oftentimes in the US, you're getting your healthcare through your employer, right? Like if I work for Capital One, then Capital One is giving me the healthcare coverage. So there's a lot of deals that happen at that employer level and also at the individual level for like, that's what the ACA and such are. But the very layman's way of thinking about it is that in the healthcare industry in the US is a lot more segmented. There are a lot of like various different systems and a lot of like innovative smaller players and like, you know, big institutional players as well, meaning that there is a lot more work to be done here than in other countries in terms of fixing the healthcare services and systems.
Got it. And do you mainly, in healthcare consulting, do you mainly help those bigger, I guess, players in the healthcare scene? Or do you do like work with quite a variety of healthcare
I've done a
provider.
variety. So just to kind of give like a general example, right? Like, you know, some of my clients have included, you know, like some of the largest, like, you know, insurances, all the way to healthcare tech companies that are bringing in like, you know, like 20, 30 million in revenue.
So quite the range.
So quite the range, exactly. You're talking about like, you know, a company worth like billions and billions of dollars to like companies that are worth maybe like under half a billion dollars.
Very cool.
Yeah, and they need very different things, right? Like, you know, for the smaller one, we might be more involved and, you know, we might actually be able to help on the general strategic direction of the company, as well as like figuring out like the operational like chain of it, right? So it's a bit more holistic. For a larger company, oftentimes, I mean, we do like massive projects where it's like multiple, like 20 different teams on the ground in the same client sometimes, you know, doing this like giant strategic goal that we set. In collaboration with the client, obviously, or it could be more like one-off where like the head of this specific business unit might need some help with this specific operational thing for, let's say, like, you know, Medicare like stars measurements, in which case we send in like a team or two to help with that specific issue as well.
Got it, got it. So he gets exposed to like a wide variety of work as well.
I would say so, although that does depend a little bit on which projects. I think another good thing to mention about consulting in general, and maybe more specifically towards healthcare too, because it's such a wide variety of things, is that it is very project dependent. Like you're gonna, it is a bit up to you on which projects you want to take on, because ideally there's gonna be a couple of different options. So it is, they will guide you. But there is also some expectation that you, as a consultant, when you're going on projects, are doing your due diligence to choose, okay, these are the projects that I want to take, either because the topic is interesting or I like the leadership or it's, you know, something that I haven't tried before and I feel like I need to fill out this part of my toolkit, or all of the above or some of the above, right? But it is a very like project by project cadence, which does kind of matter in terms of, you know, like if so, if you wanted to do, for example, just all big clients, and that's kind of where you want to end up, maybe after you like, you know, move on to your next job. Fine by that. Like, I feel like a lot of people actually make their entire like careers and their expertise based on that. If you want to do like Medicare specifically, which by the way, the healthcare system in US, there's like, as we call it, commercial, Medicare, and Medicaid lines of business. And then there's an individual, which sometimes gets grouped under commercial. Medicare being for the government instituted healthcare for over 65 people, and the Medicaid being the state instituted program for the folks at a certain level of like, you know, economic need or some sort of disability, right? Commercial being like everybody else. So like if I really want to just do stuff with like Medicare business, because there is a lot more like comorbidities, because we're dealing with people that are older and all that. Then you could just take on Medicare project after Medicare project, granted if there is enough projects to go around. Or if you want to like a random walk, as we call it, and then you want to get a lay of the land across different roles, different functions, different types of projects, like you might want to also get a mix of like your 8-week strategy project, you know, combined with like a 6 months like implementation project, you know, like everything in between, right? Then you can also choose to do so. I chose more so the latter as opposed to really specifically specializing, which I'll talk about specialization in a little bit, but I feel like if you were just starting out, then like it matters a little less to you at the moment. Yeah, like what I personally did was I did a bit of a wider variety just to kind of get a taste of what does the healthcare systems and services industry in the US look like.
That's cool. You must have gotten quite a look at everything then.
Yeah, I mean, there's not enough time to look at everything, unfortunately, because it is such a convoluted industry. But yeah, I got my fair share of stories.
Wow. So I know this is probably a really hard question for consultants to answer. But going back to your, I guess, first job, your first entry-level consulting job at Capital One, could you walk us through maybe like a typical day in the role?
Sure. So, and one clarification there, right? So like I called the Capital One job that I took a consulting job because it was a bit of a unique position within the company. Like typically when you start at Capital One, you're gonna probably be assigned to one of like the products, right? Like, you know, you are under the US like credit card side, or you might be in the mortgage side or whatever it is. I came in as part of the what was then the internal strategy department. So it was an internal group of people that were sitting. It was like maybe like 20, 30 of us. If you include like, business intelligence folks that shared an office with us, and it's like 50 people, maybe maximum, that were responsible for essentially acting as internal consultants to different Capital One leaders. So it wasn't that we were owning like a product or we were launching a product like, other arms are doing, right? It was more so if they came to us with specific questions, like, what should we do about the mortgage business? Or, hey, like, I want to capture this specific segment of the member population, like the customer population. What kind of credit card reward should I put in there? Then these questions were what, we would also then tackle on like a project by project basis. But that is why I call it a consulting role at the end of the day, because you are effectively somebody that is playing the consultant role just for the company that you're hired to.
Got it, got it. So it's kind of cool you got hired into an internal strategy role straight out of college then.
Yeah, they were specifically doing some campus interviews and stuff. So maybe just kind of walk through like how that happened and, like what kind of led up to it, right? So in college, it was actually a bit of a departure. So in college, I was pre-med for a bit. I was a double major in neurobiology and economics. The economics part actually came later. I sort of added it on towards like the last half of my college side. It's not easy doing all the class load in 2 or 3 years, 2.5 years. But I started out thinking that I might go into academia. So there was like a year, like a summer after freshman year, I did, like lab plus like shadowing in the ER. Decided that maybe I wanted to not do the academic life. Maybe I wanted to sort of check out what else is there. So my sophomore year summer, I interned at an R&D segment within a pharmaceutical company. Yeah, so it was a bit of science still, like lab work, but within more like the commercial side as opposed to like an academic side. And then I decided, okay, maybe I want to try out things that are more higher strategic in nature because it's still R&D. It still takes quite a bit of time. And I think I would like to, be behind decisions that actually take a little less time to come to fruition, right? And maybe a little less direct impact on people's lives, but like it's at least like, widespread impact because you now have the power of a company behind you. So then my junior year summer, I ended up going into a very boutique healthcare consulting company that was really supporting a lot of these like pharmaceutical companies, medical product companies, and also some like insurances. So all of these would point me towards like after graduating, get like a healthcare job. That is not what I did because Capital One, as you know, is a bank. It is nowhere near related to healthcare. So it was a bit of a departure from my usual role. And I kind of did it because I wanted to test something, very different. It was a bit of like, I feel like I've only done healthcare my entire life. I don't actually know anything outside of it. I feel like I need to understand what is outside of it in order for me to understand that I actually like healthcare and not just very specific elements of it. And so I actually cast it, maybe going back to your original question. So I cast a pretty wide net my senior year looking for the next role, essentially. And then I started interviewing more for like, various roles, really. It was a lot of like generalist consulting companies, like your McKinsey, Bain, BCGs, along with like other consulting companies like Accenture, Deloitte as well. And then this Capital One thing came by because it came by in like a campus presentation, and then I like chatted with them because I was like, I don't know what this role is. Interesting that it's like you guys call yourself internal consulting. I don't know what that means. And then they were just very friendly people to talk to, and then they sort of convinced me to apply for this. And then after like multiple rounds of like interview and then like a final round interview in their, campus in like McLean, Virginia, like I was like, all right, like they seem like nice enough people and this seems fun enough such that I wouldn't mind working here. Ultimately it turned out that the answer to my question that I was trying to answer, which is like, do I actually care about healthcare specifically, was yes, I care about healthcare a lot more than credit cards, which is why I ended up leaving there fairly quickly. But it was that was sort of the layout of how I ended up finding that job and landing it. It was a bit half chance and half a bit of I wanted to cast a wider net.
Got it, got it. And how had you heard about all the jobs you were applying for?
Was a mix of things. A lot of it actually came through the college. I think it was a job board. Especially for the seniors, you probably remember this too, but like they had like an entire like list of, okay, here's like the on-campus recruiting schedule. There's like a job fair. You go there, you talk about giving your resume, you talk about the timelines, and then they actually come to the campus to interview you, which is very convenient. Now, that is not always the case, depending on the college and also depending on the company, especially now after COVID-19. I feel like people have really ramped down their on-campus presence. And it's a lot more online now. So what you end up actually doing is I basically have like an Excel spreadsheet. This is also what I did, by the way, after I quit my Capital One job and then was looking for the next one before I landed my McKinsey role, which was I essentially had an Excel spreadsheet of like, these are the jobs, here are the links to those jobs, or like how I might apply. Here's some sort of prioritization on like how interested I'm in this job. And then you usually want to get a good mix of them in, because if you have three jobs that you really want and you only apply for these three, and then even if you, let's say, get the interviews, then you're probably less practiced. So it's good to get like a nice buffer to just make sure that you have like a good pitch, and then you have like a good way of presenting yourself before you really go into some of these interviews. But that being said, yeah, this is a bit of a numbers game at that point, right? Like you identify the jobs that you want, you organize them in some way, you prioritize them in some way, and then you think about, okay, like which, if I think about the pipeline of like initial resume screen to like, first round interview, second round interview, if there is one, and then a final round interview, then like how are things moving through that? And at what point do you just kind of call the shots of like, this is an offer that I'll be happy to accept? Ideally speaking, you want at least two offers so that you can sort of compare the numbers and then use one of like a leverage to negotiate the other one. But that really depends on your pipeline too. Like if you put more things into, and by the way, like the pipeline does matter both in terms of quantity and quality. Like it is important that like you're not applying to two jobs, obviously. You also don't have to apply to 300. In fact, I think that's actually discouraged, because you then can focus on the quality. Because if you then have like a more tailored application for each of the jobs that you apply for, then it does increase your success of then converting that into an interview, which then converts your chance of final round too, right? So I would say, like if you're looking to cast a wide net like I was, then probably do like a few dozen, like at least like putting the resume. The resume screening does have a pretty steep drop off, I would say this. I think that's actually the hardest part of the overall like pipeline, if you will. Like if I think about the conversion from like initial list to after resume, first round, and then after final round to offer, the steepest drop off is in like the first bucket. So it actually does help to cast a wider net there, and then have like a few dozen there, because what will inevitably happen is that they might actually convert into maybe like a dozen or two interviews, which then might yield you maybe like three or four offers.
Got it, got it. That's a great way to think about it.
Yeah. And by the way, like, if you're more focused on like a specific role or like a specific industry, maybe you don't actually need to cast as wide of a net, right? Like if you have a clear list of these are the 20 companies that I need to be working for at least one of them for, then start with these 20. See where it goes.
Got it. And the program you did at Capital One, was that like a kind of management trainee program? Like, was it like specifically for college graduates, or was it like a general entry level type program?
They definitely hired mostly from colleges. I think we may have had maybe like one or two people that might have come in not directly from college, but as like an entry role from after working somewhere else for a year. But yeah, it was by and large a college hiring program. And because they noticed, they do have like a pretty significant training program too. Like if I remember correctly, and my memory is a little hazy of this, like there was like an entire like month or so of just like trainings that we had to take on like the fundamentals of like strategy, like the deductive thinking, how to use data, how to present the data, all of before we actually got our first assignment as a project.
Oh, that's pretty awesome. Like a whole month
Yeah.
where you go in and just train.
Exactly. It was a pretty comprehensive training program, if I remember correctly.
Oh, okay.
And by the way, that wasn't just the strategy arm. I think a lot of the Capital One, at least like that banking in general, I think is like pretty good about the initial ramp up.
Got it, got it. Now, what was the most surprising thing about it when you started?
Surprising thing about what, Capital One or for?
I guess Capital One or like consulting in general.
It's a good question. I mean, I feel like a lot of things have surprised me, right? I think a lot of it is, look, I mean, I think there may be like two types of surprises that you get. One of which is more so surprises about the role that you're playing. And I think the other is like surprises about, I guess, how the world works. So the role that you're playing part, it was more of like a learning on like, look, you know, like here are, it's a lot of like micro surprises, the best way to put it. Like, you're not gonna, if you know what consulting is before you start a consulting job, which I hope you do, you're not gonna be like, oh, this is totally different from what I was expecting to be doing. Like, it's gonna be pretty close to your expectations. What does surprise you, and like what I call the micro surprises, are just the different ways in which people think about doing this job. For example, something as small as, you know, at least in the US, like, you know, people's like reading typically moves from left side to the right side and from up to down. And therefore, like, you know, how do you want to think about designing this page? You want to start with like your key message in the left-hand side, and then you might want to put in the detailed notes or like your charts on like the right-hand side, right? And then the lead of the title, obviously, like the most important, because like that is the first thing that actually catches their mind, especially if you're looking at like the CXO level. Like stuff like that, right? Or it could be as simple as, look, you know, like it's not necessarily about generating the correct answer, because it is absolutely about that. Like, you do need to, you know, rely on the facts and try to give as good of a recommendation as possible within the constraints that you have. But it is also equally about emotions as it is about logic. Like, I think you end up, you know, learning a bit more about it. And this is like the latter part of what I was mentioning on, like, you kind of learn how the world works, right? Which is that if you kind of expected it to be like, oh, here are the charts and here are my numbers, like, nobody can disagree with me, man, boy, are you going to be wrong. It is a lot more, the harder part is not being right. The harder part is about convincing others that whether this is, you know, like correct or not, like factual or not, like, you know, getting them to do something in a way that is different from what they're doing, and convincing them and understanding what convinces them is actually the more important part, I would argue. And this is like a time and old consulting like tidbit, right? Which is the change management is a lot harder than the strategy. Like, that's actually where the really the shovel hits the dirt. And in large part, like the success of a new program that you started or like an innovative tool that you really made depends on whether people use it and whether the people use it willingly.
Got it. So if I'm understanding you correctly, people don't just see charts and then are convinced to change their behavior or whatever they're doing.
It's a little less. Well, see, yes, that is a correct statement. I think what I'm trying to say is a bit more broad, right? Which is more around, it is not just the facts that are going to convince people. So remember, as a consultant, your job is not to generate facts. It is to convince people, and facts are just one of the tools in your toolbox to do so.
So, what kind of emotions do you use then to convince people? Or, like, how do you use
I don't think
emotions?
it's emotions you use. I think it's more so being attuned. So consulting at the end of the day is it's a people service industry. And what that means is you need to be well attuned to the needs of your customers ultimately, right? Not just the customers, but also the people that you'll be working with, whether that's internal or whether that's with the clients. So for example, like, let's say you just created like a great, you know, great new like generative AI tool. Like, it like synthesizes documents for people. It like, you know, like spits it out in like a very nice way. They're able to do their like, you know, document search a lot faster or something like that. If somebody has been in that, you know, job for like a good, let's say like 10 years, and they're already used to doing things a certain way, then that is a nuisance to them. That is annoying to them that they have to then retrain themselves on this new fancy like magic Gen AI tool that they don't really know what it does. And then somehow expect it to generate the answers that is actually comfortable to it, right? Like, there's a lot of like, I mean, it's not rational, right? But it's also understandable. Right. And that's one of the many examples in which like these types of like more personal problems appear and that you need to be able to sort of like guide and right. Because at the end of the day, like a company department is not just, you know, like a inorganic department, right? It is just made up of individual people. So if you can convince individual people in it, then that actually helps quite a bit with the final job as well. In that case of like the Gen AI tool, like, you know, what we ended up doing was like really like sat down with them, right? Like we walked them through, we made like a user guide, we hosted like office hours, as we call them, to, you know, really do like an end-to-end, like here's how you might use it. Here are like five different ways you could actually plug this into your like day-to-day life right now. It is not to replace you. It is not to, because ultimately you do need to sign off on it. But under these conditions, if you use this and it's really easy to use because we designed the UI UX with your help, you could probably review five documents in the time that it took you to review one. You can go back to your kids early. So like that's what I mean by not use, but like appeal to the emotional side of people.
Got it, got it. And you mentioned strategy, change management. What kind of projects did you most like and most dislike?
Oh, that's a very like personal value judgment. I really like the projects that we did for our smaller clients, because then you really get to, and especially growth projects. So there's two things, and the reason is because if you have a company that is small and if they have great ambitions to grow quick, then what happens is that suddenly like all of your interests align, right? Like they want to grow, you're like, okay, great. Like, you know, I will, you know, look at every single part in your organization and then see the different areas in which you can grow. Like, for example, if you're going to go from like your $30 million in revenue to like $100 million in revenue, there's a lot of things that break, right? Potentially. Like, how do you ramp up your sales cadence? Like, how do you make sure that your operations are scaled up enough such that they can actually handle like potentially 3x the volume of claims that you were handling before? Like, how do you think about the different like in markets so that and like the contracting with providers in these markets such that the sales teams can actually sell in these markets? Because if you don't have a product, then how do you sell, right? So it's a multimodal, like, you know, consideration for like the broader strategy on how do we actually scale something? Like, you already have like a fine business. How do we make it the best that it could be? And in these cases, like there's just general excitement from the client side as well, right? Because, you know, like we're not trying to like modify how they're doing business. It's more so like, how do we help them achieve their wildest aspirations? And also, if it's a smaller company, then what that does is that like you end up actually being able to see a little bit of like everything of how this whole company operates. So instead of getting a view into like, oh, this like specific business unit under this VP within this large organization, I get a sense of, okay, this is what the whole company does. Here are all the products. Here are all of the different ways in which we're selling them. Here are all the markets. And maybe we can consider new products. Maybe we can consider M&As. Maybe like all of interesting things like that becomes it becomes a more strategic play.
I
But that's
love
my personal value judgment. I also know a lot of colleagues that really enjoy like, you know, giant like mass scale implementation projects for because like they really like seeing the impact and feeling it. I also know colleagues that really like just building tools quite a bit. There's also like, you know, people that really just do a bunch of like, you know, private equity projects, you know, like really doing due diligences, right? So like this like more like M&A style, like, you know, quick, very intense, but like you learn a lot type projects. So it's that's very much like a personal value judgment.
Makes sense, makes sense. And you brought up a lot of stuff that sounds like, you know, like helping a company grow and telling them, suggesting certain products they can launch, things like that. How do you work on that kind of stuff, like straight out of college? Like what kind of background or knowledge base do you need to have, to have that sort of, you know, to be able to give recommendations like that?
Yeah, so to be clear, like, you know, like on your first project, you're not going to be solving the whole company's issues with like a one fell swoop, right? That is what the team is for. That is what all of the different people that are involved in the project are for. So I think the angle that I might approach it with is, especially if you're just fresh out of college, is think about ways in which you could contribute to shaping that final answer. And that could be, and by the way, like I would actually argue that like the business analyst and associate, which are like the entry level positions, quote unquote, right? At least in McKinsey, are the ones that are really running the show. Like you are the ones that are going to be running a lot of the interviews, right? Like, ENS interviews, like some client interviews. You're going to be doing a lot of the data analysis. You're going to be doing a lot of the page making, like synthesis of the insights, all of these. You are closest to the data and the insights, meaning that you actually have an opportunity to distill the ones that you think are most interesting and most pertinent to the question at hand, and then present it to essentially up the internal chain, right? So that's actually like I would say one of the best ways you can contribute is like you don't have to be responsible for like the full answer, right? Like nobody's gonna put their burden on you, thankfully. But you can help shape that answer and then test out ideas by being a collaborative colleague based on the work stream that you're owning and therefore know better than everybody else. And that's actually, I guess, another side advice is that if you own a work stream, absolutely kill it and be the expert in that specific work stream because no one else is going to be. And then go the next step of connecting what you know from that work stream to the broader question at hand. Like oftentimes, like the pitfall that we fall into is because, for example, like me as a BA, I like spent the entire week building like an entire Excel model. There's like so many different like moving parts and bells and whistles, right? You can get very much enamored with the bells and whistles, but it doesn't matter at the end of the day. Like it is a cool Excel model. I did a good job. Like, you can be proud of that, right? But at the end of the day, it's more so about like what answers does this model then give me that I can then present. It is more about how does this then help me solve the or answer the question that I was asked to answer.
Got it, got it. And so I guess what is the process like for solving a client's problem? Like, is it the analysts, they take the data, they analyze it, and based on that, like your higher ups then look at the data and then come up with certain suggestions? Or like, how does that usually work?
Yeah, that's actually, I probably should have started there. This is a good question. So typically the way that consulting teams work, there's usually a manager that is leading anywhere from zero to, I've seen seven, but most typically two or three team members being like the business analysts or associates, right? And then there's usually a partner, like an associate partner and like senior partner that's spending some portion of their time, not full time, but portion of their time. Like, for example, me as an AP, I was splitting time between like three different projects. When you become a partner, that becomes even more fragmented. When you become a senior partner, you probably have your hand in almost everything. EM is the last level at which you are like specifically tied to one project at a time. So
EM,
typically
like
it is that
engagement
EM engagement
manager.
manager. Yes, sorry. I get too
No
used to
worries.
the But yeah, it's like the manager and the specific team that like, like group of like anywhere from one to like eight, but most often like three to four people are the fundamental like units of like Lego blocks of solving the problem at hand. So typically what happens is like the manager is responsible for sort of planning out the overall, scope and the timeline, more importantly, of the project. Like here's where we're gonna be doing this analysis, here's where we're gonna be doing this. And then there'll usually be like a lot of like communication between the manager and like the partners, APP, like SP, right? To align on it, like get the right, intel, and make sure that like, all of the right things are scoped to make sure that we can actually do the work and generate a good answer by the end of it. That's before the study. And then the study gets staffed. And then once the study starts, then it's just like a week in, week out, like the EM, the engagement manager is the one that's actually really driving a lot of the work and generating content. And all of the leadership that is involved there on a part-time basis are there to spend time with them, give them some answers, especially on like very topical, like where it requires some expertise, right? Or they can connect you to people that actually know a lot more about it because there's a bit of network that we also have that we can, help the manager with, right? As well as make sure that everything is sort of client ready and they're stress testing a lot of the answers that the team is generating. And then the specific interaction between the managers and like the associate VAs, I assume that's a bit more pertinent for this audience. It depends quite a bit. If you're just starting out, then you're usually going to be getting quite a bit of like coaching, such like very carved out work streams that you'll be helping out the team with. Oftentimes it's going to be, hey, like, can you make this page, like do this research based on like some press, or like, can you run these like interviews with like, expert network folks and then take good notes. That's actually very important, very good notes, and then synthesize them. And then once they're synthesized, and the manager is usually the one that's sort of storylining all the insights into like a cohesive deck, right? Like here's how the PowerPoint is gonna flow. This is how we're gonna tell the story, which then it gets iterated upwards too. But a lot of the content and what really, makes the meat and bone of that overall document that you eventually present to the client as a recommendation is coming from the work that the VAs and the associates are gonna be doing.
Got it, got it. I guess let's do to go to like final reflections. Yeah, what are your long-term career plans?
I eventually want my own company, ideally in the healthcare industry. So that's why I'm also kind of like thinking more of like an operational role, right? Like, I've kind of gotten like a more strategic sense of how do I help these companies that are, like either on their way to being well established or already very well established, like, continue to succeed. What I would want to eventually do is like, kind of fill the gap in my knowledge of, how do you not go from like 1 billion to 2 billion, but how do you go from like $0 to like your first 2 million, right? So that, and also, instead of recommending specific things that like the leader could be doing, what does it feel like to be really in the driver's seat? That is, and then now your name is tied to like the overall like P&L, right? Like you are now responsible for the finances, you're responsible for the success of this business unit. What are the ideas? What are the tools that you have in your, yeah. So like I've spent a lot of my time helping people in that role and then giving them sound advice, but now can I take my own advice and then run it if I were given the chance to?
Got it, got it. And if you had a second chance, what would you do differently about your career so far? Like, would you have skipped maybe your chapter at Capital One entirely and just gone straight to
Yeah, it's
healthcare
a good
consulting?
question. I'm not sure I would have done much differently. I mean, knowing what I know now, like it is easy for me to say like skip Capital One, right? Because like I ultimately didn't really want to do anything that was like finance services related. But I feel like I needed the Capital One job and then doing that for a while to realize that I didn't like it. If I didn't do it, then I feel like even now I might be wondering, huh, I wonder what grass looks like on the other side. So I don't regret it for that reason. No, really not that much. Not that much different. Maybe spend a little less time at Capital One because I figured out pretty quickly that I didn't really like the industry as a whole. And yet I spent like a year and 3 months there, which is still kind of long. Well, it's not like long by like any standard. Like it's still relatively short, I suppose, but like it felt very long to me. So if I could make that more like 8 months and then moved into my like current McKinsey role, that probably would have saved me, I guess, not that much time. So yeah.
Got it, got it. Would it have been possible to, let's say, like if you had moved your testing phase to your internships, like if you had tried out, let's say, Capital One as an internship and then learned then that, oh, you don't really like it, do you think that would have worked or too
I don't
short?
think so because my internship, as I sort of like orate, was already a bit of experimentation, right? And I do recommend this for a lot of people that are like starting college. Like each summer is your opportunity to try something and really experience it so that you get a better sense for what you want and what you like and what you don't. But like, as I said, I did academic research for a summer, non-academic commercial research for a summer, and then I went full like in a healthcare consulting at a boutique. So it's a pretty varied like transition. I didn't do the whole like I'm gonna do the same thing like every summer, which so like that helped me sort of set my goals sort of beyond like pre-med. I didn't want to be a doctor. I didn't want to go into academia after my, like first 2 years essentially. And then healthcare consulting then sort of like helped me understand what consulting was. And then, okay, like I could actually see myself doing this, which is what sort of cemented my interest in like the more, how do I put this? Like more capitalist side of things, I suppose. Like the, or better put, like, the actual intersection between the healthcare aspect of it and the economic aspect of it. Because ultimately both are, like, if you have both of these, then that's what starts to matter to the masses, right? Not just like, 20 people that you see a day.
Got it, got it. All right. Any final advice you'd share with students or college grads?
For current students, I guess the best advice that I have is make the most of it. It is, once you start working, you don't ever get like a few months of sabbatical that you can just absolutely, like choose to do nothing with, or like, do something new and fun and interesting with. Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a moment like that, or like even like an extended like pay time off in the last like 8 years. So take advantage of it. Like do something fun, do something new, and make sure that you have the time to do it, is what I would say for the people that are currently in college. And most important is just like, like experiment a bit, because like otherwise, how will you know yourself? For people that are recent grads or are in the are about to exit, I guess, in the next, like, I don't know how the school years work in Australia, but in the US, I guess people will be graduating in the next like 3, 4 months, right? It's your first job is going to be a little jarring, I won't lie, because it is a very different mode of working. Keep an open mind, be open to feedback, and be coachable. Like, find the people that you like and respect and think are good at their jobs that you want to emulate. Talk to them and then say, hey, look, I would love to learn from you. Like, can you show me how you do this? Or can you tell me what goes through your mind when you're doing this? So approach it with a very much like a growth mindset, which I know sounds very trite, but I think it is very true. That is the best way to quickly scale up, like get a lot less green. And be a very helpful like person in the team. And like by doing that, I think the team and the company will love you back, right? So try to think about it as this is an, just like another class, I guess, you take, in college, except now it just happens to be a bit longer than a class, I suppose, right? And it is just like learning any other skill, except it just takes a little bit more like soft skills development as opposed to memorizing hard things.
Got it, got it. All right, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and wisdom that you accumulated over these years.
Yeah, of course.